This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1.
This is Bob Fetrakis bringing you The Other Side of the News, brought to you in part by freepress.org. Where you're always going to want to go and read for The Other Side of the News. That's freepress.org. I'm in the studio with Deb Steele with Jobs with Justice, a very novel idea in the U.S., but in other parts of the world, a little more common. And Deb's involved. I'll let you her tell you about it. Deb's involved with a battle on the Near East Side of Columbus, Ohio, which involves OSU, that's right, the Ohio State University, and other developers. What's happening on the Near East Side, Deb?
Well, OSU is expanding their hospital on main campus through Project One, and underneath Project One, or some developments afterwards, not quite sure what the development name is for the Near East, but they have turned the old VA clinic into CarePoint East. And they also have East Hospital out there that I think might get an expansion wing. I'm not quite sure. But late 2010, OSU got a tax break, technically a jobs growth tax incentive, up to $35 million over 15 years.
Who is that from?
From the city of Columbus. From the city of Columbus gave OSU up to $35 million over 15 years. And in turn, OSU is reinvesting $10 million over 10 years into the Near East. So on the surface, that all sounds fantastic. Nobody's against development. But what we're fighting for is appropriate, sustainable development, and more specifically, a legally binding contract that says we should try to hire this many locals. We should try to preserve historic housing, rent control, you know, for a long time, not just one house at $130,000, but all kinds of things like that. But in a binding way is what's essential. So some seed money is here. OSU is definitely expanding, but it's important that the community has a real say in that process and not no defining who the community is and things of that nature.
What do you mean by sustainable development?
To make sure the community can grow with OSU. If we were able to get a local hiring provision, we'd want to also make sure those are family-sustaining wages and benefits. We don't want to see a lot of moderate-income jobs. That certainly doesn't help the community in the long run.
Are you worried that people that are now living there, renters, elderly people that have been there for generations, may be priced out of the area if there is this new development?
You know, right now, what's happened with the $10 million reinvestment, so when OSU got their $35 million tax break, jobs growth tax incentive, the MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, $10 million was a joint OSU jumping in with Columbus Metropolitan Housing Association, who owns Poindexter Village currently, and the City of Columbus. So all three of these entities are reinvesting $10 million. And what's quite obvious to a lot of folks is that OSU has a serious interest in the future of that Poindexter Village site. And it's historic housing, it's important housing, it's community, it's, you know, owned by the public, the federal government technically managed at the city level. And many of us have been saying for 2 years or more, OSU wants Poindexter Village. And we have less than 30 days paperwork-wise, I'm fairly sure. But from what I've gathered that OSU said March 12th, or I'm sorry, CMHA, we have less than 30 days to stop the demolition of Poindexter Village paperwork-wise. The trucks would come later. But that's what's so at stake right now, and that's what's so critical about the meeting we're having next Saturday.
So are we really talking about the G word here? And I'm not talking about gangsta. I'm talking about gentrification. Is getting rid of Poindexter Village a way to remove more low-income people and bring in or develop it in a way that you'll be getting more upper-middle-class people in the areas? Is that the plan?
You know, I don't know what the plan is. I know who I've been talking to and that we want to fight for local jobs. And what we do know is that CMHA is closing Poindexter Village. They said they were going to close Poindexter Village years ago. And what is vital now is that the community has a real stake in a conversation in the future of that land. And this is also a class issue. Of course, this is a race issue, and it's a class issue. And none of these things happen in isolation, obviously. So we got to fight for a local hiring provision, family-sustaining wages and benefits, and that's appropriate, sustainable development. And we're also working with folks that want to see at least six of these buildings maintained. Poindexter qualifies 2 out of 4 criteria as historic housing. So obviously the area needs development, but it's not as simple as bulldoze what's supposed to be community-held land.
So when we're looking at this plan, is part of the problem is we don't really know what the actual plan is, and there's no community input from the bottom up?
We've got the three players, CMHA, Columbus Metropolitan Housing Association, OSU, and City of Columbus. They created an advisory board, and that advisory board's called PACT, Partners in Achieving Community Transitions or Transformations. So PACT has had a process. They've had conversations. And as I've been saying, since December 2010, nobody's against a conversation. But enormous decisions are being made. Who's making those decisions? It's hard to tell. So often publicly we hear there's no plan, no decisions have been made, and then the next thing you know, HUD awarded $300,000 to the future of Poindexter. So the point is, we're not waiting till decisions are made. We have to be part of that decision-making process.
And how would you do that? How would the neighborhood group, is there an organization, essentially invite itself in with the most powerful entities in Central Ohio? Arguably, Ohio State is more powerful than the city of Columbus. That's my perspective.
Sure.
Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority has been involved in the massive, massive relocation of people in the past and still has a large budget. When you get those three entities together, how do people that aren't in those three entities get involved in the conversation?
When we look at City of Columbus, there are elected officials, and so voting is always important, and who's in city council is always important. And so that's a long-term thing there. But in the near run, we need to hold them accountable. And they are powerful entities, but they're supposed to be working for us. And in the situation of OSU, I'm a proud graduate of 2003, graduate of OSU, and the short conversation I've had with Gordon Gee, he asked me if I got a good education, and I hope he's impressed with my work. But, with OSU, they're fighting cancer, and they're, where I went to school, and those are great things to be, but we need to be part of the development, because Wyland Park, OSU was involved in Wyland Park, and there's some pockets of good things, and there seems to be a lot of big business things coming, and same with the South Gateway expansion. I liked when Long's Bookstore was a local-owned bookstore when I went to college, and it's not a local-owned bookstore anymore. We have things that look like skyscrapers, so we need sustainable development, not national companies coming in, lower-income families moving out, and when they do come in, let's be part of that process.
And your group is calling for a meeting next Saturday?
Next Saturday at 1 p.m. at the Neighborhood House. That is the 14th of April. And what I meant to say earlier is the way we see this is a community benefit agreement would be a legally binding agreement, and a coalition would be formed to have OSU or the City of Columbus sign that agreement, and then the coalition has to hold the developers' feet to their fire and make them follow through on it.
I don't know. I haven't watched develop. I'm a Near East Area Commissioner for the record here, and ever since I've been on that, which is now nearly a decade, we've been complaining that the development on the east side from the city with federal dollars, with government money, never seems to actually involve people that live in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. How do we accomplish that?
We ought to be proactive on this development. Going back to the Wyland Park area and South Gateway expansion, there was a whole lot of job readiness programs that came in there. But as far as I know, none of those, mostly men that went through that program, are working on Project One, the medical center. So while the medical center was years apart, had we been very proactive on that development and said OSU or, you know, you should try to hire 50 or 100 or 150 people from this zip code, and let's do a career ladder or a jobs training program that targets them for these construction jobs or the permanent jobs. So now we're in a situation where the medical center is expanding mainly on main campus, but also out here out east. We've been asking for a year, did anybody get hired to work at CarePoint East from the local community? And I don't think so, or it's a fluke if it did happen. And that's not to drag OSU through the mud for the fun of it. Let's be proactive on that development. We have 3,500 jobs coming 2015 to main campus. We need a career ladder now that targets people that are, you know, at the end of high school and people ready to change careers. And this will also help some workers gain higher skilled jobs at OSU. Workers could be part of that process through union involvement. Because union workers know what's required better sometimes than even management on climbing up to the next level of employment or a 50-cent raise. So we want to have a career ladder that targets local folks and allows existing employees to climb with OSU. I know John Kasich likes to say anybody from out of the state is foreigners. This isn't a race. We cannot have race-to-the-bottom type jobs. We need to have appropriate development, and we just, fortunately at this point, it seems to be top-down development, some pockets of good things, maybe would see a home port or any kind of program that might have a $130,000 house for one generation, but we need a longer view here. In New York City, they have rent control that helps moderate income folks for more than a generation make sure that we have folks that can live close to their employment. And that's green as well. This is some of the most important land in the city. So when we really think about trying to get off of what will be $5 a gallon gasoline, we need to make sure that people who are living on moderate wages and low-income wages aren't all beyond the outer belt of 270. And those are productive folks for the economy as well.
But isn't that where Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority has been pushing those people with housing developments out in Canal Winchester? It seems like, from my observation, there's been a deliberate attempt to deconcentrate poor people from some of the most valuable property right off the downtown. And that this, if we go back, there was public housing, as I recall, in that area, and now it's condos. And then there was, right, was it Poindexter Towers, and is that's no longer going to be, or is no longer public housing. And then there was another one where people had actually bought their units, and they moved everyone out and knocked down that building. And was there not Jenkins Tower as well, where people were moved out, some were moved back in? It seems like we're in a long-term process where you're deconcentrating those on public housing assistance, moving them much farther out and claiming what would be new, I agree with you, new, very valuable, green, sustainable land for people with higher incomes, professionals, managerial, technical workers.
Yeah, I mean, I hear, you know, this is just vital that the community grows with OSU. And so CMHA has been shedding its housing stock. They had scattered sites, which was individual residential homes throughout the city of Columbus. Jenkins Terrace, they still own.
Most of those Section 8, right? You get a voucher?
Well, so when folks are relocated, for the most part, as far as I know, they go on the Section 8 market. And we do know of one person who was relocated out of Poindexter and lost her Section 8 voucher a month later. So obviously when you're in government housing, the government has more responsibility for you. When you're on this voucher program and the landlord chooses to stop taking Section 8, you're on your own at that point. And so they will release by zip code where people are going. And in this situation, they may not be pushing people. People may not be going out to 270 as much as relocation projects I've seen in the past, where it was more Hilliard, Blacklick, Grove City. You know, there seems to be a pretty close relationship between Columbus Metropolitan Housing Association and National Church Residencies. You know, but my expertise, being that I'm from Jobs with Justice, is more in trying to fight for this career ladder and local hiring provision. In building a community benefit agreement, we make a coalition where I work with Brownsville Neighborhood Association. And Willis Brown knows more about the immediate near-term needs, like streetlights and trying to expose brick streets. And I work with workers at OSU and this jobs bucket, perhaps. And, you know, environmentalists could fight for bike paths and more community gardens and things of that nature. And so that we all carry different expertise, and that other people who know more about rent control would carry the long-term housing piece and fighting for the historic housing. And that is holistic development, that's proactive development, and it's something developers often don't want to do. And other community benefit fights, and community benefit agreement is a great Google search if you're looking for one, they had to fight really hard to get the developer to sign it. And you have to fight really hard to make them try to hire 500 locals. So it's not as simple as come out to the meeting this Saturday and we've got it, but we've got to have you come out to the meeting because this is so important for the future of our development. It's important people are registered to vote. It's important we track these monies because we're talking millions and millions of dollars in the future of the Near East Side.
You're listening to WCRS Community Radio 98.3 102.1. It's Bob Fitrakis. The other side of the news. I'm in the studio with Deborah Steele of Jobs with Justice, and we're talking about new forms of sustainable development on the Near East Side of Columbus, Ohio. There's a collaboration loose, a collaborative between Columbus Metropolitan Housing, the city of Columbus, and that behemoth, the Ohio State University. The question is, who's going to get this jobs? Who's going to benefit? And is there a hidden agenda, and this is my perspective, of gentrification? And there's nothing new about this. Battles historically in Columbia University in New York, University of Chicago, of course, on the south side of Chicago in Hyde Park. Is this where we're at in Columbus? And what can people do about it? On Saturday, April 14th, if I go to that meeting, what's likely to happen to that meeting? Why should I be there if I'm living on the Near East Side of Columbus?
And that meeting is going to be at 1 p.m., 1000 Atchison Street, 43203. The neighborhood house. So, and I encourage anybody that even lives in Columbus, because we as taxpayers are subsidizing this development. We did a survey about a year and a half ago, and there were folks in Clintonville who wrote down that G word on our survey, very concerned to make sure that OSU wouldn't be seen as benefiting from the displacement of an enormous historic community of color. So if people come to this meeting, we are hoping to debut a list of sort of master list of questions. Some questions have been somewhat answered, and a lot of questions have not been answered that we've been submitting to PACT or OSU, and see existing reports of audio recordings we have from various meetings, and sort of see where the ball is at in this pretty important court. And the more people that participate, the more we can show people are concerned and that they want to see something more than an advisory board controlled by the developer on how the future of this Near East Side goes.
And I know a lot of people are sort of curious in this process. Number one, as a reason to be concerned, again, Joyce Beatty, who worked on the relocation at Jenkins Tower, who was a vice president at Ohio State, is now the odds-on favor, and I say this as the Green Party candidate. Everyone expects her to win in the third congressional district, and I know people very reputable who have said internally Ohio State has referred to her as the representative from Ohio State. So the question, federal money coming into that area, a possibility, great housing stock, but also where does this leave Mount Vernon Plaza? It really has a reputation of being an urban, some would say, central city mall. Is it all going to be done over? Are there already plans in place? Do you worry about that the community has already been excluded?
You know, I can't possibly keep up with all the layers of past development that has happened. I mean, there's so many questions about the Whitney Project and $4 million going missing. And you know, this was front page the day after or the day of Christmas. And as far as I know, Mayor Coleman saying nothing about $4 million going missing. And the same folks are in control of this next layer of development. And so I cannot at all per se what the future of the various blocks and segments and past and NSP funds and who was part of that process. What is important now is what we know is in play. The $35 million jobs growth tax incentive is out there. OSU is somehow reinvesting $10 million. That's leading to leveraging other funds. OSU on main campus, we're also pushing back against the privatization of parking lots. And so it suddenly becomes very difficult for us to see the request for proposal because they're going into these public-private ventures. And so in the Near East and on main campus, they say things like, you can come to the office if you'd like to see the RFP. So that's like one of the list of questions we're going to ask Saturday the 14th at 1 p.m., you know, as you venture more into these public-private relationships, what say do we really have in this process? So obviously, I think that's an awful thing to be doing. I don't think they should privatize parking. It'll be detrimental to revenue on campus, main campus. And out here in the Near East, it's not as simple. I'm not, like, okay with them saying for 2 years, we're not interested in the future of Poindexter. Oh, look, here we are with a $300,000 grant from HUD. Of course we'd be interested in the future of Poindexter. And, yeah, you know, with public-private ventures, we can't be, you know, open about the process. It's a public-private venture. That's the kind of conversation that I've been having through random 2 years of working on this almost full-time. And the community doesn't have that luxury, and nobody likes the runaround. So let's be real, let's be proactive, let's sign a community benefit agreement, and let's be part of the development.
Who would sign the agreement? Who would be the parties to that agreement?
That would be the developer, and I believe that's OSU. Now, there's also the possibility of a community benefit policy that would be ran through the city, and to the mayor's staff's credit, you know, they have met with us once. We hope to meet again to talk more about this. So the developer signs community benefit agreements, and that's to mitigate the cost of them expanding. So that's the goal. And it's something that if Ohio State can do, we can applaud them with the development. I would love to applaud that they hired 50 locals. You know, we would be part of the celebrations versus questioning, is this celebration just a facade for some other agenda?
Wait, well, you mentioned that they may have already destroyed, or they may be having at least the authorization on paper to destroy Poindexter Village. Mm-hmm. How much input did the residents of Poindexter Village have in that process?
Well, what's important, and again, come to the meeting this Saturday, is that process has not been signed off on yet. So CMHA did decide, I think, you know, 4 or some years ago in their 5-year plan to close Poindexter. To me, the vital question is what happens to that land, and it is, in my book, not CMHA's call to bulldoze it. They have to hand it over in a responsible way. They can't leave buildings half standing. But we are fighting for more of a community say in what happens, and that those buildings qualify 2 out of the 4 criteria to be historic. And one small answer we've finally gotten back, and it's a horrible answer, is even if it qualifies to be historic, all we have to do is take a picture. And that simply doesn't cut it. This is part of the American, United States experience, government housing. And this government housing stock is some of the most successful in the entire country. There are so many historical stories, important stories. Angela Pace, to name one. Some, I think, elected official in Indiana, famous boxer. There are so many people who lived in those buildings and went on to, you know, achieve this American dream that's harder and harder for folks to achieve. And so it's not as simple as take a picture. It's not CMHA's call to say that. And March 12th, they had a public forum where they said, basically, this is in process. And so we're pouring over that audio tape and trying to figure out exactly what the timeline is so that when we communicate that this Saturday, we can point to what Brian Brown said from CMHA. But, you know, I'm concerned they're going to sign it over to whatever bulldozing company they like, probably whoever did Sunshine Terrace. And somebody in the community March 12th asked, can we have the bricks? Could we reuse the bricks? Could we use locals to take down the bricks? And Mr. Brown from CMHA said, no, we give that to the demolition company. That's just part of the deal. And I was trying to be polite in that meeting, but I started saying to the folks around me, no, you can't even have a brick. That's just not appropriate, sustainable development. That's top-down development. And another list in our question is, what has CMHA done with the profits from selling Sawyer Towers, from selling Sunshine, from selling the individual scattered site locations? I mean, this goes up to the federal level, and it's incredibly important.
It's interesting because a lot of this, as I look back to the 1980s when Ronald Reagan took over, at a certain point, Jack Kemp was secretary involved in housing and urban development, as they called it then. And his big point is that the residents should own the housing. Is what was keeping them poor was lack of home ownership. So many of these people over time had been promised some equity in these units dating back to the 1980s. For example, Sullivan Gardens, another historical site they got rid of, is they were money was being actually taken out of monthly payments to give those over to those people. And then it was like, well, there's no flood law. We got to knock it down. Then they knocked everything down. The people who lived there didn't get any equity in the housing. And then they built a flood wall, which made the property valuable again. So this process, it seems like somebody's going to make money. And I'm thinking, as Poindexter Village goes down and there's abandoned housing, the housing stock, which is very good in that area, very historic, may plummet, which may allow forces, I don't know if they're public or private, to go in and buy those very cheaply. And I don't want to say flip, but on the other side of that, if they hold on to them or sell them, there seems to be tremendous profits to be made, and it's not the people that have lived there for generations, and it may not be people of color, since that's a historically black neighborhood. Are those concerns?
Absolutely. I mean, right now in the existing PACT process, and that's, again, OSU, City of Columbus, and CMHA creating an advisory board called Partnerships in Achieving Community Transitions. Right now they say a stakeholder is anyone who lives, worships, or appreciates the Near East Side. So there's been a lot of OSU activists coming down and Occupy activists concerned about that G word and understand the classism that's happening as well. And they have said, and very eloquently, I think it's wrong that I have as much of a say in the process PACT has set up as someone who owns and has lived here. You know, and we have audio footage of that happening as well through a forum that was put on at the African American Extension Center. So that is just simply not okay. That is not doable, that locals don't have a legally binding say in this process. We have conversations that PACT sets up where it goes through a filter, and a lot of good-intending people are in these conversations hoping that their idea will rise to the top and stick, but there's simply no assurance that that's happened, and all kinds of evidence that the other types of things have happened. There's just, we want to be proactive in the conversation. We want to be proactive with the development. We need a binding agreement so that we can be part of the development, not left continuing to ask questions, and we see moderate and lower income people get pushed further and further out. We can grow with upper income people coming here as well, but it's not, it's, we cannot afford top-down development and $300,000 houses only.
Once again, when's the meeting?
That is going to be the Saturday, the 14th, at 1 p.m., 1000 Atchison Street, I'm fairly sure, the neighborhood house, 43203.
And what's going to happen at that meeting?
It's going to be a community forum. It's the round table. This is the third one. We have them about once a month. We're going to debut our list of questions, you know, show people the resources of what has been gathered so far, and talk about what appropriate sustainable development needs means. And what we can do to form this coalition. We have a pledge card. I want appropriate sustainable development. And that way we can have a proactive, stronger conversation together than people continuing to ask questions and not getting a response.
April 14th, 1 o'clock, 1000 Atchison, your group, Jobs with Justice, trying to get the people, actual stakeholders. You seem to prefer people that actually live in the neighborhood. I think it's a bit odd that people that worship there and may be living way out in the suburbs are similarly described or appreciate. I could appreciate the Near East Side if I lived way out in the suburbs, particularly if I might make some profit from it.
Even if you lived on the East Coast, you might appreciate the Near East Side.
All right, one more time before we go off the air. Where's that meeting?
It's going to be on 1000 Atchison Street, 43203. That's the neighborhood house at 1 p.m.
on April 14th. Deborah Steele, Jobs with Justice. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.